session number 10599, reel 12.
Major English, Reel 12. Will you continue with the description of the Battle of Marath, Major?
Soon after this, I went down myself to down the road to meet the 9DLI and saw Major Worrell, who was the left-hand company commander of the 9th. He had been wounded himself, but was carrying on, and he had quite a lot of casualties in the attack, but he had gained their position. He had no news of the rest of 9DLI, and he was out of communication with his battalion headquarters. At first light on the 21st of March, everything seems to be pretty quiet. I was reasonably happy with the platoon positions which we'd laid out in the dark, and we could see about 500 yards away on our front an enemy strong point, and we could see a light gun, I imagine about a 20 millimeter gun, in that position. It was obvious that 6DLI had not come through as they should have done. Admin position was pretty good. We had most of our ammunition still there, and each man, of course, had been carrying a packet of biscuits and a tin of bully beef, so we were all right for food for at least a day. During the morning, the British bombers came over again and pounded the enemy rear areas. As things were pretty quiet, I sent Captain Welsh back to battalion headquarters, taking the wounded with him, and I ordered him to report to the CO as to our position, and made a plea for anti-tank guns to be sent up, and a mortar OP if possible. We were shelled by this 20 millimeter gun on our front from time to time, but the company's Bren guns engaged it, and I don't know whether we hit anybody or not, but it seemed to keep it quiet. Meanwhile, the crossing place over the Wadi was being heavily shelled all day. One of these shells, or a shell meant for us perhaps, wounded a very good section commander in 14 platoon, Corporal Porter, and he, poor chap, was lying there wounded for several hours. In the afternoon, 15 platoon commander Busty Roberts, he reported that Italian infantry were forming up for an attack, so the company stood too. And we informed battalion over the radio. And Captain Wakelin, who we still had with us as the forward observer, a battery target for his guns. When his CO heard about this potential attack coming in, he made it a regimental target. And the fire of all 36 guns landed on these Italians, who seemed to be in about a battalion strength. They were caught in the open. They hadn't advanced very far, and the artillery fire completely broke up the attack. About 80 prisoners were captured. Some came into our positions, but most of them went into the 9DLI positions, and C Company had not fired a shot. We radioed our thanks to the gunners. In the evening, Captain Welsh returned and brought hot food up for us, which was most welcome. But his news that he brought with him wasn't. He told us that the CO and the IO and Lieutenants Cantley and Bailey had been killed. The second in command, who had taken over, Hugh Blackton, had been wounded, as had the two other company commanders, Chris Beattie and Peter Lewis, and indeed Lieutenant Smith. Major Lidwell, who had been LOB, much to his annoyance, and who'd crept in on every conference he could, and it's a very good thing he did, because he was to take a very active part in the battle. He became acting CO after the battalion had in fact been commanded for a short time by the adjutant. A and B companies were amalgamated. The 6th July were to attack that night at 2200 hours, and the 50th Yorks of 69 Brigade were to attack Casiba West, which is right on the coast. Meanwhile, the sappers, the Royal Engineers, were to complete the crossing over the Wadi, been heavily shelled all day. And that was done. The rest of the 50th RTR were to cross. In fact, only three tanks got across the first night. And then they were to be followed by the battalion supporting arms, carriers, mortars and anti-tank guns.
Had you any clear picture of how deep your bridgehead was at this stage?
Well, we were probably no more than 500 yards in a direct line from the Wadi. It was 800 yards by the way we went, which was a diagonal, but the strong point of Wurzi was only 200 or 300 yards from the Wadi itself, and so the bridgehead wasn't at all deep at that stage, and was really vital for it to be deepened, and that was the object of the 6th July attack, of course. Well, now, that attack went in as planned that night. We had no news of its success or otherwise, but at dawn we could see the 6th July out in one of the positions in front of us, and we also heard tanks behind us, and this was the 50th Royal Tanks appearing and attempting to move on into the enemy position. But they were held up by anti-tank fire and by mines. At this time, Captain Wakelin was ordered to leave us and become an FOO for the gunners, for the tanks, to try and help the tanks forward. But that was a good day. Morale was pretty good. Because of these recent attacks, the enemy would push back a bit and we could move round reasonably freely. And at that time, on a roll call, we were four officers and 65 other ranks, and we'd started with about 93 all ranks at the beginning of the attack. We cleaned our weapons, of course. It was very sandy soil, and everything soon got sanded up and improved our positions, and more small arms ammunition was brought up, but unfortunately no grenades. Well, then about midday we heard over the radio that the air reconnaissance had spotted 75 tanks with infantry, probably a 15th Panzer Division, in moving up in the area of Zarat. And it was obvious that a counterattack was coming fairly soon. Again, I requested anti-tank guns, and I was confident that if we had well-sighted anti-tank guns, we could have held the position. A three-inch mortar request came that we zero or register targets for them, which we proceeded to do. What we didn't know, or what I didn't know at that time, was that the fascine crossing built by the sappers in the night had been broken up by the tanks, and there was nothing more could get across. Anyway, we made all certain the 68 grenades were in order and waited for the counterattack. About 13:30, the enemy shelling of the crossing place behind us increased considerably. And this was very accurate. And also, lighter guns were firing on our positions, again with considerable accuracy. The Germans obviously had registered everything, all these strong points, beforehand. It was obvious now that we were not going to get any anti-tank guns. We could see enemy tanks and infantry about a mile away, moving up, and this we reported to a battalion, of course. And about 1400, the attack started in earnest. We could see that the Germans recaptured a strong point on our half left with the code name of Susan, which had been held by the 60 LI, and we also heard that the 9th battalion had lost a position. About half an hour to three quarters of an hour after this, three German tanks, two Mark IV specials with a long 75mm gun and a Mark III, came into our company area down the low ground in front of us, but still outside grenade range. Corporal Simpson, the radio operator, he carried on operating his set and passing messages as if he was on an exercise, totally undeterred by the shelling that was going on. And at that time, only C Company and B Company were on the battalion net. We had a number of casualties from this shelling, and there was a big gun, I don't know, might be a 155mm, perhaps even bigger than that, throwing at us what men call flying kit bags, and these landed with a tremendous explosion. The only good thing about it was it made such a noise coming towards us that everyone could get down into their slit trenches in good time. The Germans concentrated at first on the British tanks, and the 50th RTR that day fought a gallant action. They only had in each troop one tank with a six-pounder, the rest were two-pounders, and they were totally outgunned by the German tanks, and they were just knocked off one position after another. I think they lost 32 tanks and in that afternoon and had many casualties, including Colonel Cairns, the commanding officer. The tanks in our company area began to get crept up closer, and 15 platoon fired a 68 grenade at one of them and damaged the track of the Mark III, and 14 platoon were firing at the commanders with their Bren guns, but the tanks replied with long bursts from their machine guns, extremely rapid and rather frightening. Company could do very little except sit it out. I thought that a concentration of artillery fire on the tanks and at that stage we couldn't see infantry behind them, but there were some behind them, would help. We, as far as we could, told the platoons that this was coming, and this arrived very promptly. This was a pretty shattering experience, but obviously the Germans thought so too, because they pulled back perhaps 100, 200 yards. Well, the time wore on and nothing decisive had happened yet. The 15th platoon commander, Busty Roberts, sent his runner over to me with a request that, that there were 15 casualties in 15th platoon and could they please be evacuated. I didn't know who this man was, this runner. He had just recently arrived in the company and I hadn't got to know his name. When he got up to go back, I having told him that with the tank sitting in the company area at the moment, there was absolutely no way we could evacuate these wounded. And as he got up to run back, he was shot by a tank machine gun. About 5 o'clock, the shelling increased considerably again, and the tanks advanced once more, firing their machine guns more or less continuously. And then behind them, we could see their infantry, the Panzer Grenadiers, moving up to attack. And we couldn't engage these infantry with our small arms because of the intensity of the fire from the tank machine guns. And one tank came right into 14 platoon's position and started grinding in the slit trenches. And I think at that, Sergeant Holborn and the 8 men he still had remaining surrendered. Sergeant Major Ranson with the company headquarter Bren gun and a Bren gunner from 13 platoon fired at the tank commanders' heads, who we could just see popping out of the top of their turrets. This made them duck down inside the tank, and it also frightened the infantry. The tanks then turned to firing their 75mm guns at our slit trenches from extremely close range. And as he was bringing his gun up again, just putting his head over the slit trench to fire again, Sergeant Major Ranson was shot straight through the forehead in the same trench as I was. So died a very gallant man. It was getting dark now, and I thought, well, if we can hang on till dark, we might perhaps write. I was absolutely sure that if the Germans put in a determined attack, we really couldn't stop them. Instead of that, they started shouting to us to surrender. And we replied with Bren rifle fire. Occasionally grenades. B Company at this time seemed to have gone off the air, and C Company was on a one-to-one link with battalion, and we gave a running commentary to the CO of the progress of the battle. Then a German tank with infantry riding on it came right up to the road, and Private Lewis, who had been taken over the company headquarters Bren gun when Sergeant Major Ranson was killed, he fired at these infantry on the tank, and we threw 36 grenades at them, and that scared them off, and the infantry retired, and presently the tanks also. I think the German tank commander must have called for more artillery, because a vicious stonk, which is a a slang word for a concentration of fire, came down on the company. It was pretty obvious that the end couldn't be far off. We really only had 303 ammunition left, and not a lot of that. Then a shell landed between my trench and Lance Corporal Simpson's, and the 18 radio set went up 2 or 3 feet in the air, and that was the end of our communications with battalion headquarters. It was about 7 o'clock and getting pretty dark, and because of this the Germans seemed to pull back a bit, and then a runner came out of the night from battalion headquarters with orders for us to withdraw to the anti-tank ditch. No sooner had he given that than off he went. There was no time to ask any questions. So I passed the order on to platoons, telling them to bring as many wounded out with them as they could. Unfortunately, a number could not be brought out and were taken prisoner. Now, one of these was Lance Corporal Bainbridge, who had been captured in France in 1940 with D Company, and who, with a man called Roberts, escaped from their camp in Poland and walked into Russia, where they were pretty badly treated on the supposition that they were spies. They were repatriated and they rejoined the army, and Lance Corporal Bainbridge came out to us as a reinforcement, and there he was taken prisoner again. The message having got round to the platoons, we began to withdraw. As we were withdrawing, my batman, Private Corley, he was wounded. We collected in low ground behind the company position, and I counted 3 officers and 23 men, and we had been 69 all ranks at midday. When we reached the anti-tank ditch, we were met by Major Lidwell, the CO, and C Company was put out on the left of the battalion positions, which were really aligned along the and in the anti-tank ditch, in a very poor defensive position. We dug in the sides of the anti-tank ditch. And I was next to Major Wood's company of the 6DLI. There were a number of German attacks in the night, and some of them got pretty close. Fortunately, the 2nd Cheshires had 2 Vickers machine guns set up on top. These helped us to defeat the German attacks. Everything was getting terribly sanded up, and it was quite a job cleaning weapons, so bolts, etc., worked. We were then told that the battalion was to attack Wurzi as part of a brigade attack to regain the main strong points that we'd lost. Fortunately, this was cancelled, and instead, the order came to retire to the other side of the anti-tank ditch. Now, unfortunately, that order never reached C Company. And soon after dawn, I walked along the anti-tank ditch and was very surprised that there was nobody on my right. I went round a slight bend in the anti-tank ditch and came across 5 Panzer Grenadiers. I attempted to shoot them with my revolver. I think I hit one bloke in the leg, but that was as far as we got. and I was captured. Just to complete the story, perhaps, of the company, which I heard later, that the Germans had moved through the anti-tank ditch when the battalion had withdrawn, and on the ground between the anti-tank ditch and the wadi. And there was C Company and George Wood's company of the 6th left in the anti-tank ditch, more or less surrounded. So Captain Welsh, when I had appeared to be missing, he ordered bayonets to be fixed and a charge through the Germans. Well, they got, most of them got to the other side of the wadi. There were a number of casualties from mines as they charged through. And after considerable chaos and quite a lot of casualties, they eventually managed to get out of the wadi and back to our lines. Well, now, meanwhile, I was taken to the rear, and we walked through what had been the battlefield.
Can I just ask you at this point, Major, when you say you were captured, you'd been firing your revolver, did they jump you, or did you?
Well, I had exhausted the rounds in my revolver, as I say, not to any great effect, and they had submachine guns and rifles, and then they pointed these at me, and then they came up and took a revolver off me and captured me. I think I was very lucky, really, not to be shot out of hand.
Yes, I was just going to ask you that. Did you at any time think they may have shot you?
Well, it's something they could have done, and I was grateful for them for not doing so, naturally.
You mentioned during the description of the battle one of your officers being shell-shocked as a shell landed quite close to him. What kind of thing is shell-shock? What's the reaction?
Well, I don't know. It affects people in different ways, but what I saw in this instance, and also one or two other occasions, was that the person was in a totally shocked condition and couldn't really speak and couldn't take any action about anything and would just sit about more or less looking more or less asleep, except he had his eyes open and could not take any action even to save his own skin.